When he has thus arrived at this point in introspection with the infinite cosmos about him, he will then not need to create some sort of a vehicle to transport his frame of flesh from one given point in this infinite universe to another, but he will be able, through suitable and various types of oscillating mechanisms, to actually change the basic oscillating frequency of the various atoms in his body as well as in other different atomic forms about him. Thus, if he so wishes and adheres to the physical body to the degree that he believes it is necessary to transport that physical body in some given form, from one point of the universe to another, he can do so in an entirely different dimension than that of his now existing material consciousness. This was done 2,000 years ago by the Avatar who walked upon the surface of the water of the Sea of Galilee in the Holy Land, and walked through walls and did other types of seemingly magical phenomena which are called pseudo by the present-day scientist. Other outstanding examples of this frequency transference in the relationship of atomic forms to the infinite cosmos has been exemplified in other parts of the world. We can still see, to some degree, some of these present forms of previously existing manifestations in our own present-day world, such as various forms of fire walking, or we could search the back reaches of such empires as India and find supernormal phenomena, which could only be explained in common terminating points which involve intercosmic understanding. This all means that in the future, if the scientist continues to adhere to his present-day hidebound attitudes of classical science, he will make little or no progress, and all progress of science at the present time has been done in that stumbling, blundering and idiotic fashion wherein he has succeeded through constant and sometimes abortive attempts to thwart some seemingly known physical laws and finally arrive at some interpolation of concept in his own mind wherein he has proven that the known barriers of his physical science were actually non-existent. For the moment then, it is possible to consider that in the future man will understand, as far as the mind is concerned, the way in which it might consciously integrate itself with the infinite cosmos, that the mind could and would, as a necessary means of combining various concepts within itself, simultaneously relate any one particular individual to one or a hundred different points of junction. In this sense of the word, too, man could be considered in the appearance of realization as consciousness in his own immediate mind, that he could thus be actually existing in any given point of the universe or in any given number of points of the universe simultaneously. Chapter 18. Concept is only one of these adjutants to understanding and, in understanding or realizing it in its full intensity, so far as the individual is concerned, man has actually eliminated all known barriers of time and space in his own immediate reactive physical world. The body, as a vehicle wherein the 12 or 15 million brain cells have thus been impounded, means little, or is of absolutely no consequence whatsoever in regard to the fact that we are immediately concerned with objectifying consciousness in any part of the infinite cosmos. When this is done through a system of relationships and through existing forms of energy transferences known as vibrations, oscillations, or cyclic patterns of interdimensional relationships, it merely means we have linked ourselves infinitely to this infinite cosmos with any one or a number of given points of perspective. When this particular symposium is carried into a little higher dimension of relationship, as man is a product of evolutionary circumstance, he will, in developing this particular relationship of life to himself in the future, also build a seemingly necessary energy body wherein he will be able to express, through various centers of this energy body, the necessary polarizing and catalyzing forms of energy which will actually integrate him with this infinite cosmos. This will explain to the religionist, the theosophist, or the cultist, the actual existence of the human embodiment in some higher or spiritual dimension. This is not done through the living form of flesh in future days of the resurrection, as it is expressed in our modern-day Christianity, wherein the Christian believes that somehow his body will be gathered together when a certain horn blowing takes place. Actually, he will be able in some period of time, such as a millennium, to integrate sufficient wisdom into his mind so that he will see the possibilities of living in another world which is not material in nature, and that his body will be composed of pure energy waveforms in different polarity patterns which can be similarized to the various organs of his body in their functional relationships to him and to the infinite cosmos. In that far-off and seemingly distant future, as far as the materialist is concerned at the moment, he will no doubt possess the necessary understanding so that he can look into this energy body and see its functional relationship to the infinite cosmos about him, just as he can see and relate his own physical body into his own immediate physical environment. The various organs of the body, as they function in a physical sense, are quite well known to almost everyone in this day and age, and the various ways and means in which organic chemistry is sustained in this body is also, to some degree, known to everyone. In the future thousands of years, when people have developed consciousness to the degree that they can see themselves living in this pulsating energy body and that the various centers in this psychic or spiritual body are just as realistically integrated as are the various poles in the more infinite cosmogony about them, they will then indeed be spiritual creatures and will no longer need to return to the earth. At this is one more of the infinite ways in which the great universal mind, or the originating creator of all things, is thus concerned by maintaining infinity into all finite abstractions of various interdimensional relationships. This universal mind is infinite in all things, and in so being infinite, must therefore maintain this finite abstraction into all things. Man, as he is posed and lives and equates his physical world, is and will be just as he has always been, only one of the infinite number of points of introspection which any individual will maintain for any given point of time in his travels into the infinite. This material dimension is actually the beginning of the evolutionary process which will carry him into the higher spiritual worlds where he will live in the future. He is in this way, in expressing his material world, only polarizing the various forms of consciousness as they are contained in the more complete abstractions of the higher superconsciousness, as it has been posed and explained in previous contexts. Quite necessarily then, the various adjutants which would support this consciousness in a suitable physical or material environment, have also become part of this environmental transposition wherein he can live and manifest life in different and suitable agencies for its expression. In part then, man's abysmal ignorance can be somewhat justified on the basis that he is still comparatively a very primitive creature, in the eye of this infinite consciousness. His greatest and most difficult problem as to the immediate present is to free his mentality and his concept of the world about him from the more immediate reactionary plane of existence wherein he has, through his physical science, attempted to justify the infinite cosmos and thus to free himself from his binding pit of clay. He can develop consciousness to a degree which will more suitably integrate him with infinity and in relationships which are much higher and much more spiritual in nature. Men can therefore be considered in true essence, a creature which is still not completely man but is actually very strongly related to the animal kingdom upon which he depends for his very existence. Man, in his daily life, is still exhibiting many of the more animal-like characteristics and attributes from which he sprang, such as giving birth to living young and suckling them upon the breast, just as do the animals in the lower kingdoms about him. He is also quite as guilty as some animals in various expressions of passion, such as hate, avarice and the will to survive, which gives him the necessary destructive intents wherein he will actually destroy his fellow man to support that in which he believes, in the various ideologies for his own existence. If he could only realize before he fired a gun or exploded an atom bomb, that the infinite cosmogony is quite capable of supporting not only all of the known inhabitants on the face of the earth in a much higher state of consciousness, but that there are also an infinite number of human beings living in various dimensions all about him and also in much different states of consciousness. Should he at any time, before firing these weapons of war, obtained within his own inner consciousness some glimpse of this infinity about him, he would quite likely throw away these weapons and warlike attitudes and start to live for the day wherein he would more fully justify in his own consciousness one of these higher forms of life. Unfortunately, however, as far as time is concerned, And as time is the necessary adjutant in these material worlds for the sole and express purpose of relating any individual into a natural sequence of consequences, the average human being, as he exists on the face of the earth today, is quite necessarily living in the age and time which he has justified by previous lifetimes. In other words, as a product of evolution, through hundreds or thousands of lifetimes, man has built himself up to his present state of consciousness and is fully expressing it in the material worlds at this moment. We are therefore not concerned with these materialists who believe so strongly in complete justification of all known material values in their everyday life, but we are more immediately concerned with those who have gone beyond this point into some of the more spiritual abstractions in which they have, either consciously or intuitively, incepted into consciousness various experiences in past lifetimes as well as such interpolations of consciousness in which they have lived in spiritual worlds in the lives between earth lives. Every person does, from the time of death until the time of rebirth, live in some spiritual world, and to the materialist this is indeed a very nebulous, grey and hazy world wherein he finds himself without his physical body, simply because he does not have the necessary forms of consciousness to maintain a conscious relationship with the spiritual world in which he finds himself, and all of his values of life are posed upon material values which no longer exist in the spiritual world about him. Consciousness to this degree, however, is fortunately not completely justified in all intents and purposes. For overshadowing any human being in this netherworld of spiritual values is that higher superconsciousness, that spiritual cell or nucleus, which has been created in cyclic patterns by the infinite consciousness. These guiding and motivating forces which are constantly stemming into the psychic body of the person who is wandering about in the spiritual netherworlds, without form or substance, sometimes do, and will eventually in some succeeding spiritual world, in the life between lives, lead him into such plateaus of understanding wherein he can see his fellow men about him existing in different states of spiritual consciousness. He then begins to form within his own mind the will and the desire to elevate himself into a more realistic position with this infinite cosmogony. Therefore, in succeeding lives on the earth plane, he will consequently seek about him in his present physical environment the various and necessary forms of life wherein he can justify what he intuitively or inwardly knows to be a higher form of life. Thus he has been spiritually quickened to a degree wherein he now wishes to shed the material world in all its entirety and in all its implications. He will also be quite conscious and keenly aware of all the various deficiencies in the material world about him. He will become much more alert and aware of the intense suffering going on in the various hospital wards, asylums and prisons in this physical world. As a consequence, he will be imbued with a greater desire to help relieve these sufferings, for somehow within the reaches of his inner self is oscillating a former pattern of relationship lived in a spiritual world and in a higher plateau of understanding. To this person, therefore, can be given the message of hope, should he continue on in his pursuance of a higher spiritual way of life, he will eventually escape the domain and the dominion of this physical world and will gradually evolve into one of these higher worlds of consciousness. We, therefore, who have been spiritually quickened and are aware, cannot be deterred from our purpose of evolution into these higher worlds, nor will we be intimidated by the various coercive agencies which are expressed about us in the world today. We will not be driven from our forward path of evolution by snide remarks that we are queer people or we have queer ideas, neither shall we take the various compounds of philosophies as they are extracted from this physical world and physical science about us, as the ultimate values in this spiritual evolution. We also thoroughly understand that these values are just as necessary to the materialistic minds as our spiritual values are necessary to we who have been so spiritually quickened, that they too, are undergoing that common metamorphosis, just as we did in the past, and in the future, their guiding light of higher spiritual consciousness will eventually lead them into a higher relationship of spiritual values and will point out to them, quite obviously, not only the necessity but the complete feasibility of life in the higher worlds without the necessity of the physical existence. Therefore, life in these spiritual worlds is not a mystical supposition, as it has posed in various pantheologies, cultisms and even in our modern Christianity, but is a factual and realistic development of life. It means an integration of heretofore unknown elements of interdimensional transpositions into everyone's daily life and, as the infinite is filled with an infinite number of different interpolations of life, through consciousness, we automatically select such environments and such inclusions into our lives as make these things compatible with us. We also develop the necessary vehicle of transposition, such as the various bodily forms and the other environmental factors which help to polarize and justify the life which we find in these higher spiritual dimensions and make life much more compatible and suitable to us, even more so than we shall find in our physical dimension at the present time. For indeed it is so, that when we have realized this spiritual life has been completely freed from the sins and iniquities, the dogmatic patterns of interpolations of the physical plane, then it must also be that we shall live in complete freedom from them, for they shall no longer exist in our consciousness. Instead, we shall supplant these patterns with a more infinite interpolation of life wherein we shall begin to oscillate, through common centers of intelligence in our spiritually formed body and mind, into the various infinite reaches of the cosmic universe. In that day and time, if it can be called time, we will have justified our search for utopia, we shall have found our new city of Jerusalem, as it is called by Christianity, we shall have found that Nirvana, as it was termed by Buddha, the happy hunting ground by the American Indian, and we shall have found any one or any particular type of heaven which has been vaguely visualized by the inhabitants of the earth in one period of time or another. Man must not create for himself an escape mechanism simply to escape the earth, without forming suitable relationships with the infinite into which he shall travel in the future, for if he does seek to escape the world simply because of its worldly implications without suitable knowledge of the future, it would truly be disastrous to his forward path of evolution and would only incur greater amounts of suffering and so-called karma in future lifetimes and dispensations. Therefore, it is wise and it is well that we be constantly alerted in our future way of life, to impound as much of the higher spiritual values of life as possible, to completely do away with and tear down the known limited barriers of physical consciousness and to realize that the infinite cosmogony, as it is within, can be realized within the precincts of our own immediate consciousness, for this is indeed the only true way of all men and the purpose of all men. Gather ye not treasures of earth for rust and moth to corrupt, but rather, gather ye treasures in heaven. Chapter 19. No work of this kind could be considered complete without including the much talked of present-day physical phenomenon called cosmic rays, for in the precincts of various concepts which involve cosmic rays, their origin and manifestation, will be found several of the most important equivalents in the infinite creative cosmogony. At the present time, science knows considerably more about cosmic rays than it did at the beginning of their discovery, but it is commonly admitted by scientists alike, that their source or origin is still unknown. Present scientific terminology classifies many types of cosmic rays and, while these are primarily of interest in an academic sense to the scientist alone, we shall therefore not discuss them categorically or in such lengthy presentations, as a further study along these lines can be pursued by the student who wishes to do so, from such concurrently publicized concepts existing at the present time. Briefly, cosmic rays relate to a certain type of small electronic energy particles which are entering into the Earth's atmosphere at tremendous rates of speed, and these small electric constituents, to the scientist, represent a solid bit of matter. Yet here again, the scientist is confused by the terminology of what is called solid, and he will find, in the future dispensations of science, that this seemingly solid particle will again resolve itself, whether it is an electron in an atom or a cosmic ray particle, and it can be determined in this resolution, to again present sub-infinity in another subatomic or sub-electronic form, and he will be impressed by the common symposium or comparison to our present solar system. The actual discovery, as far as modern science is concerned with cosmic rays, started almost 100 years ago, in the late 1800s, from a commonly devised laboratory device called an electroscope, which was simply a small glass sphere or globe wherein, upon a short glass pedestal, were fastened 2 1-inch squares of thin gold leaf. It was found when subjecting this sphere to an intense radiated field of magnetic energy, the trapped air within the sphere became ionized or charged, that is, each molecule of air assumed a certain charge of electricity and, under normal conditions when the stimulating or the magnetic field was removed, this ionization would disappear. However, this ionization was found to immediately cause these 2 small pieces of gold leaf to fly apart at right angles and to remain at this obtuse angle over a long period of time wherein, by simply removing the electromagnetic field of force, they would have normally collapsed into their normal position. This slow rate of discharge in ionization was found to be supplemented by an external field of radiation, which has concurrently developed into our existing knowledge of cosmic rays. It was first presupposed that this external radiation came from close association with the Earth itself. However, in the early 1900s, experiments made by climbing mountains and balloon ascensions determined that the rate of precipitation of this electronic field was increased as altitude above the Earth's surface was increased. In other words, the atmosphere formed some sort of a point of absorption, so far as this cosmic radiation was concerned. With the invention of the aquarium-like device known as a cloud chamber, wherein a quantity of fog-like gas was imprisoned, cosmic rays could be seen to make vapor trails across this fog-like gas and thus be photographed. While the particles themselves have never been photographed, yet the scientist possesses thousands of photographs of various types of vapor trails left by differently charged kinds of cosmic ray particles. At the present time, science has subdivided into various categories and divisions, about 20 or so different types of cosmic ray particles, and he has determined, according to such positive or negative or combinations of electronic charges contained therein, their life duration, speed and the amount of curvature which they attain, either to the right or to the left, when entering into the Earth's magnetic field. However, science does not yet know the exact source or origin of these cosmic ray particles. With this thought in mind, we shall enter into a new field of introspection which will open up to the reader a new vista or a new horizon of creative thinking, wherein he can actually see within his mind's eye just how it is that the seemingly so-called particle masses as they are presented by the Earth, the planets, the Sun and various other stars in our galaxy or our universe or even universes beyond were created, and even the very sustaining processes of the atoms themselves. For in a common term of reference, so far as the different kinds of energy transferences are concerned, they are synonymous in nature and relate in all respects. However, into such fields or dimensions which are presently unknown to our modern scientist. Herein is a case where the old adage is used, that the tail is wagging the dog, for the scientist has been attempting in these different directions of investigation and research, to determine and to equate the whole infinite cosmogony on the basis of the few interacting developments in his third dimensional perspective. At the present time, science believes cosmic rays to be originating from some distant part of our galaxy, or any given point in the outer dimensions of interstellar space from such various refractories as are contained in the expurgation of certain particles of energy into free space from suns or other types of heavenly bodies, exploding stars or nova. It is believed by the scientist, in going through this so-called free space, these tiny electronic particles begin to be batted about in a ping-pong-like fashion from one particular sun or its electromagnetic field to another, and thus they start to attain these incredible velocities. It is known at the present time that various cosmic ray particles can penetrate as much as 12 feet of lead or go to the bottom of an ocean 2 miles in depth. They can also penetrate, at an incredible speed approaching that of light, through the very heart or nucleus of the atom itself, which is different than any other kind of energy our present-day scientist has as yet succeeded in generating. If this ping-pong effect is true, then here too, we would find that science would defeat itself in its purpose of trying to relate a true and factual reason for the existence of matter in his present terrestrial dimension. In common everyday physics, Nothing can exist without a cause, and the basic cause of matter itself is whether it is concerned with the radiant field of force around the sun or into such other particular types or junctions of introspection. The scientist has not as yet, in this supposition of the infinite cosmogony, established anything which is relative to the actual existence or the procreative factors of existence in his material world. Therefore, we must start at an entirely new point of junction in our introspection, which is far removed from our present known physical world as it is presented by the Earth and the various star clusters around us in the heavens. For all stars, solar systems, galaxies and universes can be considered only as tiny bits of surface matter which are floating upon the mind of the individual's consciousness. It was told in some of the preceding pages that space was infinitely solid and presented, so far as reactance or resistance was concerned, in different dimensions or in different spectra, a relative or quantitative amount of dimensional forms of energy, as they are posed in atomic structures in our present-day physical science. And conversely, so far as the infinite was concerned, we could also have an infinite number of other existing energy forms which were not known in present-day forms of reactance or resistance to any of our five senses. Now we shall find out just how it is that this seemingly empty space is actually an infinitely filled space, and that it must exist in some common denominator which will justify a true scientific relationship from one dimension to another, and relate all of this infinite into a harmonious pattern of junctions and interpolations. Therefore, let us begin our symposium upon a very simple equation which is contained in a familiar type of physical manifestation, by simply throwing a stone into the center of the pond. Thus we can see the waves of energy stemming away from this point of impact where the stone entered the water and out into the surrounding area. By looking at some chips we have cast upon the surface of the water, we shall find that the water itself has not moved in any particular relationship to the center or the point of impact, except that it has moved up and down in a wave-like motion or in an oscillating manner. The chips always remain in the same place wherein they were first cast. We have thus begun to analyze that here again we have transferred energy from one particular point of perspective into another. We can therefore begin with infinity, in saying we have an originating or an EMF source of force, or motion, or intelligence, whichever it is that you wish to superimpose into your consciousness, and that stemming outwardly into an infinite number of types of transferences are different kinds of manifestations of energy waveforms. These types of energy forms, in themselves, all portray individually a certain junction of relationship with the infinite, as it could be termed intelligent, either positively or negatively. However, unlike the waves which stemmed from the center of the pond, energy does not travel from the central, or infinite source of supply, into the other dimensions in these wave-like formations. Instead, we will find energy is constantly regenerating itself into various types of patterns which are cyclic in motion, or possess a certain cyclic form. Each cycle in itself presents upon its surface an undulating wave-like motion which is composed of negative and positive wave formations which are all portraying a certain kind of intelligence, and in themselves, are linked and interlinked, just as the wheels within a watch or the wheels within a chain. So we find these infinitely numbered cyclic patterns stemming out into the various dimensions about this originating source. We shall not attempt, at the moment, to interject an understanding of this originating EMF, for that, too, presupposes in itself a certain junction of harmonic patterns of transference into an even farther form of infinity, and with such an abstraction or understanding of such an infinity, the infinite would of course be physically impossible with the presently existing terminating sources of consciousness as they are posed upon the conscious mind. Thus, we see from this central or emanating source a great interplay or interchange of an infinite number of cycles of motion, each in themselves linking arm in arm with their neighbors and all relating in themselves an infinite number of patterns of various transferences of consciousness. These, in turn, regenerate into such harmonic structures as are compatible within themselves and other further extensions of such presupposed and concurrently existing forms of consciousness, or as were originally contained within the basic cycle or patterns of transference. Herein enters the principle, in the regeneration of these various harmonic structures, which is one of the creative principles impounded in infinite consciousness. There is bound to be within these various cyclic patterns of motion, certain junctions or combinations of junctions which are called parallaxes. At that particular point of terminus, as they are joined together in a certain combination of compatible unions of frequency relationship, there will be a certain hard core nucleus thus formed, comparatively hard, we shall say, because in common terms of reference, there are a large number of forms of consciousness being expressed in common union and at a common given point. In this hard core nucleus of consciousness, there sometimes originates certain vortical patterns which can be likened to the whirlwinds seen upon the desert.